the takeaway there really is that at this point, there's an understanding that we all belong, right? Now, you'll have some native people who are still very angry generationally and they want it back. But for the most part, you will find that most natives have this idea that when you're born here, you're from here. Like you being born here, your soul belongs to this land too. And so we have to get along like we did before colonization, right? We all were born here, and so our soul belonged to the land, and so we have to acknowledge each other's governments and each other's sovereignty and each other's differences respectfully and lovingly.
So feel me when I bring it, sing it loud. I'm from the loot and I'm proud. Run a mile for the cause. I'm righteous above the law. Play my style.
Hey guys, it's your girl Nahama, your favorite Jew from the Lou. Welcome back to my podcast. So I'm really excited today to share my wonderful guest, David. David, say hello.
Hello.
So today we're going to talk about a topic that I'm really unfamiliar with, and it's so interesting when you first start talking to people about what draws you to them, right? You say your hellos, your little introductions, and with me, obviously, my name is Nahama, so it's like, who is this girl? What's her name? What does it mean? I get that all the time. And that was one of your first questions. You wanted to know the origin of my name. And so, my name, for those of you who don't know, it means comfort. It's Hebrew. And the middle name is Tzivia, which is deer, like the animal. And it was so fascinating to talk about, like, culturally where names come from, because that's when we discovered that you told me that you are Native American.
That's correct.
So if you can take the floor and tell a little bit about your heritage and also specifically like the history of the names, because I think that was really intriguing.
I am Chickasaw, so I am one of 600 plus actual nations that are independent and still exist in the United States today. So my people are specifically Algonquin, so we are woodlands people, and originally you would have found us prior to westward expansion and all of that in the Carolinas. So we were sort of coastal woodlands, right? So for us anyway, and our names as children are neutral, right? So they don't have a description of gender, and they don't have a description of really much of anything. It's just sort of an identifier as this child,
Which blew
essentially.
my mind because obviously nowadays, like the concept of gender is something that everyone's talking about. This is something that is very relevant. But, coming from such a like ancient heritage to be able to talk about that, this is nothing new. This has been going on for generations.
So for us, and I can't speak for, of course, all 600 nations, but at least for our people and in our society, the Algonquin and whatnot, we didn't impose the idea of gender. So we actually have always believed that there are five genders. And within those five genders, you have straight man, straight woman, gay woman, and then fluid. And so what would happen is the elders in our society actually raised the children. Your mom and dad were working, and we have traditionally lived in multi-family generation homes. So and we're matriarchal. So you get married, and then you move into your wife's family's home. And that's where your family starts, right? And as children come in to play, new babies are born, their grandparents actually take on the role of raising them. And from there, they watch children grow when they just become who they are, right? And so as time goes on, as you come into adulthood, you'll get a second name. So you'll have a child name, and then that sort of gets abandoned at some point in time. And then you get an adult name. And then that name is a description of who you are.
Which I love. It makes a lot of sense. You know, we in Judaism, just to throw in a little bit of my heritage.
Yeah.
What we do is we believe that there is no more prophecy in the world nowadays. That's lost. But the one prophecy that is still alive is what mothers have when they name their children. Specifically in Hebrew, when you name your child, it's almost like you're prophesizing what they're going to be. Mm-hmm. So people will name their children either after a character trait or after a person, either a relative whose character was someone they want them to emulate, or after someone in the Bible who they want them to emulate. But, you know, that's given at birth, right?
Right.
And it's so interesting because whether you come from Judaism or other cultures, your name is like, you can choose a lot of things in your life, but your name, unless you change it later legally, it's given to you.
Correct.
Which is such a strange concept. But I think it's so interesting how, like, it's the grandparents who see the child, see how they're developing, and they have that wisdom mm-hmm. to be like, no, this is who you are, and I know because of my life.
Right. So culturally and historically, you know, as you get older and you become grandparents, like, you become seasoned. Mm-hmm. So you have, you know, grandparents have a lot more patience for antics, right, and whatnot. And so, yeah, they become the people who do most of the raising and so on and so forth. And then, of course, when you become great-grandparents, you kind of retire out and your role becomes different and it changes. And at that point, you're more in the capacity of wisdom and imparting understanding and life lessons and, you know, or reasoning, you know, understanding things beyond the situation that you and I may see. Right. And so then your great-grandparents actually kind of step in and it's like, you're overreacting or you're underreacting or in the grand scheme of things, that doesn't matter. And it just sort of creates this universal sort of peace. Interestingly, history has painted indigenous people as warring people, like, you know, always fighting. And that actually wasn't the case historically.
Right.
We were mostly peaceful people and we got along with our neighbors to the point where often when if two nations or tribes didn't get along, we would actually have games. The whole concept of lacrosse comes from that.
No way.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. We call it stickball.
Okay.
But it is the sort of
same concept.
It's, well, that's where lacrosse came from, was our stickball. And that was a war game. Mm-hmm. Whoever won, won. So whoever won the game, won the fight.
Can you imagine if that was how the world dealt with war nowadays? It's like, let's just get a lacrosse game going and
that's it.
And that's who wins. It's almost like the new Olympics, right? Like whoever wins, like, that's the winner. So it's like, maybe just be better.
Yeah, well, I think that was kind of the whole point. And really, the things that would cause two nations to not get along was just literally one nation being rude.
Mm.
That's really what it would boil down to, right? So, like, I would maybe go hunting on in your territory. We had a different concept of ownership. So it wasn't like this meet and bound like we think of in real estate, right?
Right.
It was more of, this is the area that I hunt where my food is, and you need to not be here.
It almost sounds like gangs a little bit, but peaceful.
Yeah. So it was just a way of establishing, I think, the way that we got along with the world around us, right? So culturally, we are really, really tied into the world that we live in and our impact. And we've always been that way.
Yeah.
So even to the point where prior to colonization, we cultivated the forests and, you know, like if we discovered something was invasive, we would remove it. Or, you know, a tree was rotting and needed to come down, it would come down. And so establishing those boundaries like that established a way for us to not overhunt or not to allow a species to overpopulate, or, you know, to maintain sort of a sense of universalism within the space that we existed. So it was really all about coexisting, you know, not overusing. When we do hunt, you use the entire animal that you have killed, right?
Nothing
so that you're not
waste.
Wasting.
Right.
Bones become decorative, or beads, or sewing needles, you know, hides become clothes, or lodging, or, you know, a whole variety of things. And so I think a common misconception, due to history, right, is that we lacked knowledge of technology, and that's mm-hmm. not the case at all. We built houses, we knew how to make glass and soap and all of these things that
very intricate
that most people don't even realize, right?
Yeah.
Like, we didn't just run around in hides. We had knowledge of fibers and how to weave and how to spin and all of those things. It's just that we also understood an impact that we had on the world around us. We chose not to do certain things.
Right. I think it's really fascinating because you just reminded me, I love the St. Louis Art Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And like on the bottom floor, they have like a lot of like Native American like heritage stuff down there, like clothing, the jewelry, like
sure.
the different like utensils that they've used. And you're right, like it's very intricate. It's beautiful. You could tell there's like a lot of craftsmanship mm-hmm. went into it. And there was a lot of knowledge behind mm-hmm. that. And it's so interesting that you say, talking about history, I remember my history teacher in high school actually used to say history is his story, the victor's story,
mm-hmm.
but you're not necessarily getting the full picture.
Right.
And it is interesting because even before you said that, you know, indigenous tribes were very peaceful, I feel like that was always kind of my feeling towards it just naturally
mm-hmm.
because the fact that that all the tribes lived like within nature
mm-hmm.
and understood how to work within nature,
mm-hmm.
that takes a lot of intelligence that unfortunately as modern society, and as much as I love modern society, I'm a city girl for sure, but it's like there is a certain knowledge that we've just lost,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy.
I don't think that we've lost it. I think that a lot of us just ignore it. I think
okay.
that most people are actually have a sensibility about them of how to sort of connect with the world, right? But I think that we surround ourselves with distractions is I guess my sort of dual cultural view, right? So if I was to, I'm very much a city person, right?
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in rural farming America in sort of a dual culture environment. I understand the concept of colonial culture very well because I grew up in it or
yeah.
around it, right? But I also grew up in this other sort of almost hidden world because, you know, most people, or I run into a lot of people who don't even realize that we still exist.
I'm one of those people.
So
I'm very ignorant.
There
I
you go.
I didn't know.
You know, or you get the you don't look Native, right? And so of course over generations, I mean we're talking, you know, a long period since the Relocation Act occurred, and,
right.
and you do get other, you know, I guess racial backgrounds that are kind of thrown in there, but we were also not all dark skinned with long black hair originally,
right?
So Woodlands people were fairer skinned to begin with because they lived in the woodlands, whereas your plains tribes, which would be like Apaches and, you know, those were your nomadic tribes as well, were much darker naturally because they were exposed to the elements more.
I feel like the similarity that I'm thinking of is like in Italy, like northern Italy, they're more fair skinned,
mm-hmm.
blonde haired, versus the more south you get, the more dark skinned, dark haired you have it.
Right.
All Italian, just different.
Right.
Right.
Right. And it's very much like that. But I think that's sort of universal, right? Like no matter where you go in the world, if you were to, let's say, travel to China and you were to go to Southwest China, it's going to be very different than if you were to go to North Central China where you have a frozen tundra.
Right.
You know,
so like the further away you get from the equator, it's almost like the lighter you get.
Right.
Could be.
Culture changes, facial features change, like everything about you will change. People lived in different areas. They developed differently. So I think it's important for people to keep in mind that that was here as well. The Americas, years ago, like before colonization, you had Americans down into South America. Like that was all one thing. And we traveled around. So it was not a reality that a person was only ever in one spot, right? So you may go travel to from what we would now call South Carolina to Mexico, right? And in along the way, you're trading and you're bringing information and materials with you that you're then going to pick up and bring back. So we had a sense of global trade.
Yeah.
That was well defined, and we knew who people were, and we knew these people down here had this thing and we might want that thing. So, but we had this thing that they didn't have. And so we're going to bring that to them. And so within our tribal system, we had confederacies. So you had groupings of nations that created like larger groups that then created larger groups of sort of systems of government, if you will.
Yeah.
And so it was like almost like this pre-existing UN, right? Like we knew if you were to have someone who was in South Carolina, they knew how to get to California, you know, and they knew who they were and they knew kind of what was going on over there. So there was also kind of a sense of currency as well. Obviously you have to have some sort of universalism, right? Like you can trade things and whatnot. And I wouldn't say that it was a currency like we exchange money today, but they were things of value. And a lot of them were like abalone shells or things that I know that this group of people, they won't have this.
Right.
And so this will have a value to them, right? So I need buffalo hides. Buffalo are not just roaming around the Carolinas in the mountains. But I have abalone shells. So I'm going to now take abalone to this nation and they're going to give me the hides. You know, but it was a value because it wasn't something that they had.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. I wonder, do you think that like 600 tribes, I'm sure there was much, much more based on what you're describing. So do you think it's like when the colonization happened, was it that they were killed through just like war and like fighting, or was it through disease that came? What really was the factor that really shrunk the?
So there's that's really multifaceted and a great question.
Okay.
So what you're going to find is that the early onset exposure, obviously you're going to have diseases that we weren't familiar with. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a natural, you know, declination of population due to that. But you also have the onset of religion and a sort of universal misunderstanding. We are a monotheistic people, right? So we believe that there's one entity that was sort of the divine creation of all things. In that, we believe that that divine creation put the energy of life into all things that are animated, right? So in order for it to be animated or alive, a tree, a blade of grass, a bison, you, that all-powerful being had to create it.
Yeah.
Right? The settlers, when they got here, saw what was happening and translated that to a polytheistic worship. instead of understanding that there was a sort of Thanksgiving that occurs when you kill something, right? So you honor the deer for giving its life so that you can live. Like, so there's an honor system that occurred, and they didn't understand that. And they thought that we were sort of like these savage, devil worshiping kind of beings, because at the time the church was super controlling, right?
Oh, yeah. It was their way or the highway.
It was. And so in steps genocide. Mm-hmm. And what you will find is that they were trying to tame the savage, right? They wanted us to be like them, which meant that you have to kind of erase culture. So that's eliminating language, that's eliminating, you know, all kinds of things. So children were taken from their homes, their hair was cut, they were forbade to speak language, they were forbade to write in that language, and pass down stories and practice the medicine and whatnot. And
just the trauma.
There was a lot of trauma, but that also leads to cultures dying, mm-hmm. and races of people dying, right? So if I'm going to erase your culture, I'm going to take you from your home, I might force marry you to somebody else that's not in your culture. And then you become that. And then you continue to marry in that. And then, of course, that bloodline gets watered down. The information from the culture gets forgotten. So on and so forth. And that's really between disease. And that's really where you see that decline occur, which unfortunately in our country didn't actually stop until the last boarding school was closed in the 90s.
In the 90s? It was mm-hmm. that recent?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So they were still forcing the culture out.
Correct.
Of the different tribes up until the 90s. That's so insane to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So to answer your question, that's really how you have the population decline, okay. Right?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that happens, and it's unfortunate, but we can see that with colonization globally. I mean, you can see that happen in India when Britain took India. You can see that in Africa, the settlements in South Africa and things like that. So you can kind of see that. New Zealand, Australia, similar experiences, but the populations are coming back. And as a culture, we were fortunate that we were able to sort of low key keep it alive.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to dive into, was your history, because obviously it's 2023 and you still have all this knowledge. You said mm-hmm. you were raised, was it part of your, what was the word you used? Not tribe, like where were you living growing up?
So we are from Oklahoma, right? Okay. Which is not where we were originally from. That's obviously where Indian territory.
Yeah.
Is where it's at. We were originally from, like I said, the Carolinas, right? So my clan is, so like, I guess there's kind of like a family structure, right?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, there's the terminology. So clan is like your family, or
so the clan that you belong to, and like I said, this is specific to me. This is not all 600 nations, right? Okay. But it's maternal. So whatever clan your mother is from is the clan that you belong to. Different tribes or nations have different clan sets. So like you could be within mine, you could be like Turtle Clan, or you could be Bear Clan, Wolf Clan, or whatever, right? So you'll have your family and then your family's clan, mm-hmm. and then you'll have the nation. So there are seven clans that comprise the nation.
Judaism has something similar, so I understand. There's like the 12 tribes, mm-hmm. and so it's like all part of like Israel and like the Jewish people, but right. then there's like the 12 tribes, and it's also by your mother. No, by your mother is, I think it's actually the tribes are by your father, but the fact that you're Jewish by birth
is your mother.
Is your mother. And my mother, if she's hearing this, which she will, is going to be banging her head on the table, being like, I sent you to school all these years and you still don't have it straight. It's been a long time since I've been in school, and I've just, yeah, my bad. That's funny. I'm trying to understand, but it's so interesting. I think there's so many, like, obviously every religion, every culture, every, like, different background has similarities, but there's also the differences. And I think mm-hmm. it is so fascinating to hear about the differences.
The differences is what makes everyone unique, right? Mm-hmm. But what I find is, well, for me, what is fascinating, right? Because I grew up, like I said, in this very sort of small, insulated environment. I understand the outside world, obviously, but I've always wanted to understand other people. So like when I went to college, I studied people. That's what I studied.
Yeah.
And I found that the sense of universalism was fascinating. Like, I guess opposite from you, I find the things that bind us together socially is the most fascinating thing. I think that we often get hung up on the labels that make us different, right? Like this person's this thing or this person's this thing or whatever the case may be. But in a world that is so divisive, I think it's absolutely fascinating to see the sort of, I guess, the hypocrisy and divisiveness, which is yeah. the universalism.
Also just the humanity in every person, right? Like our wants and needs.
Right.
Essentially are the same. You really, really break it down.
Right.
And I think it's so interesting. There was a quote, I love quotes. There was a quote that I heard recently, which was, it's hard to hate someone up close.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes maybe the uniquenesses and the differences makes you be like, no, can't be around that. That's going to sway me from who I am and what right. I want to be. And wanting to preserve whatever culture or religion that you have. But then once you get to know someone, you're like, wait, they also just want to be happy and they want to find love and they want to have meaning,
right?
You know, and purpose. And that's also what connects us.
It is. It absolutely is. I think that understanding, for me anyway, the sense of connectiveness sort of makes room for the sense of individuality, right? And if I understand how you connect to me, then you're sort of humanized, right? Because mm-hmm. I have found a bridge of understanding.
Right.
Which then leads me to find curiosity in the differences or a desire to understand and accept differences.
That was exactly what happened with us specifically.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like the fact that we both had unique ways of our names coming about, mm-hmm. but then understanding the differences between our different like cultures, that's what really kept the conversation going.
Right.
Yeah. So back to Oklahoma.
Okay.
You were living with your mother's clan mm-hmm. at the time. Mm-hmm. And so growing up, what was that like?
So that's really hard to describe. Yeah. So okay.
To break down.
It is. I mean, it to me it was just so natural that, you know, it's just I have a lot of cousins that are like third, fourth, fifth, sixth cousins, right? Mm-hmm. Culturally, we don't call them cousins. We have a different way of sort of categorizing people. So if we're in the same generation, they're brothers and sisters. If they are the parents' generation, they're moms and dads. If they are grandparents' generation, everyone, whether you're an aunt or an uncle or a cousin, if you're that generation, you are an aunt or an uncle.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You are a grandma or a grandpa. Like that's just universally the way that we do it. Of course, you understand who your nuclear family is, but we don't really have this sort of separation. So I grew up knowing, you know, all of these people personally. And then you sort of learn who they are and how they're tied together and who this person is to you and who this person is to you and how far away removed they are. This is part of our cultural identity.
Yeah.
And so, like, from really little, you grow up just learning this, and that's just part of it. And then, you know, I guess you kind of find your own self, right? So like you go out and you play with these people and you're sort of like naturally developing and you find your interests. So growing up for me was just like this very, I wouldn't say free-spirited because we have rules. I mean, there's obviously protocol and things like that.
Right.
You're not rude to your grandparents. You're not rude to your parents.
And during this time, were you just going to regular school like every other American child? Yeah,
so I was fortunate. My family is what's considered like sort of like a head family, which means that we... But there have been people in her family that have served in leadership positions, right?
Oh, cool.
So I went to a regular school. Now, some of my cousins had to go to boarding school, which means that they were just kind of like removed and sent.
Is that a separate school just for children who...
For Native children, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So some of my cousins or brothers and sisters, like they went to boarding schools. And in the summertime, we would have... cultural events, colloquially, they're called powwows, right? But essentially what they are is like a giant family reunion. That's really what it is. And so there's like this whole thing, and it's a very spiritual thing. It's in a circle, which represents sort of like life and the circle of life. And then everyone is dressed in their clothes. Regalia.
I love that.
And you dance. And a lot of the ways that we are able to pass language is through song.
Mm-hmm.
And so what a lot of people hear is more like just like syllables and things like that. And it, because they're not really trained to hear the words.
So they think it's like chanting.
Yeah. Or just mouth sounds.
Right.
Right. Whereas we actually hear the words. And so the songs actually have meaning and they are prayers.
Yeah.
And so you learn. And we spend a lot of time through the spring, from spring to fall, you know, with that. And there's various different social dances for different things. Like, for example, we have one called Green Corn. That's like a harvest sort of thing. We have a planting dance, like, so there's like all of these things that we do. And I grew up with this. And so it's sort of very closed off, right? I mean, there are people who find it and they come watch, and there are some powwows that are intended to be public, or I guess it's becoming more popular now.
Like educational almost.
For educational, right. So that people can be exposed and realize that we still exist.
Very much so, right?
We're not just a Western
it's
anymore.
It's not just like a for show that you're showing people about your culture. You're showing people about your daily life and how you connect.
Right.
I wonder if it's similar to the fact, so like obviously in America there's like a certain education system that you have to go through, right? Like there's requirements what you have to learn each year. Mm-hmm. So like in the Jewish communities, we don't want to lose our culture either.
Mm-hmm.
So parents will often opt to send their children to private Jewish schools, mm-hmm. where like growing up all throughout like middle school, high school, mm-hmm. everything, it was like all my Hebrew courses were in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then my English courses were in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So is it similar in the private schools like that? Or was it really more?
So it is now.
Okay. But
it is now.
In the past, was it maybe more like you were forced to get that English education in school? And then like your heritage education, like that was at home.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah. So when I was little, my growing and learning was really engrossed in cultural reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I became sort of, and this is the same with my brother and the rest of my cousins, like you become exposed to colonial society and thought processes like kindergarten,
right?
Like these are not concepts that you grew up with. And it's really interesting sort of to to be that young and to start thinking about some of these things, right? So, I mean, I'm not talking about like the color is purple or 1, 2, 3 ABC, right? Like I'm talking more in these sort of very odd, rigid social constructs that we have in schools that we didn't have in growing up, right? Now, in 2023, most of your tribal governments are now establishing Indian schools that are really designed around, like you were saying, you know, what you experienced, where you have your cultural classes, and then you have your required, you know, elementary and post-secondary education kind of courses. And so there's like this idea of reintroducing culture into the educational system so that you don't have that cultural shock. But I mean, I'm 42. And so 42 years ago, that wasn't...
Right. What good does it do you now?
Right. So my cousins and I that are all in the same sort of age group, you know, that was kind of what we did. So from when we were real small, we would learn culturally what was relevant, our language at home, right? And then you'd go to school and you'd put on that hat. And then when you were done with school, you would come home and put on your family hat.
It's really confusing. I feel like I've had like similar situations myself in terms of where it's like, I'm American. I was born in the US. Mm-hmm. But there's just this different culture that I was raised in. Mm-hmm. So even now, like in my 20s, when I'm like not as religious as I was the way I was raised, mm-hmm. it's still very confusing. There's still so many things about like typical American culture that like it's just weird. Just the dual cultures don't
mesh. We were talking about that, about mm-hmm. the understanding being dual cultured.
Yeah.
You know, or being, it's like bilingual.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily understand it until you are, right? Because you don't know what you don't know.
The weirdest thing is when people meet you and think you're fascinating. Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, no, no. I'm normal. You're weird. You know what I mean? It's like, you're the one who doesn't have information. For me, like, this was my family. This was the schools. These were mm-hmm. my friends. This was my community. I'm the norm. I don't know what the heck you're doing.
Right.
Because it makes no sense to me.
Right. Right.
So interesting.
Yeah, I've ran into, and it is fascinating to me. And especially when you have people that are like, well, I don't have a culture. And you're like, but you do.
Right.
We just all live in it.
It's maybe just also so filtered down as mm-hmm. well, because maybe they did come from like another country, another religion, another mm-hmm. culture, but it's just lost at this point.
I think I hear that most with your average everyday American, right? Mm-hmm. That they feel sort of culturally lost, where they're like, I'm this Heinz 57, and who am I? And it's, there's nothing wrong with being American. You know, that America has its own culture.
Right.
And it's very real and it's very relevant.
I think, don't think people consider themselves having a culture if they're from America.
I agree. You know, I agree.
Like maybe they just don't think they're that interesting. Like, oh, I'm just basic.
I think that you're probably right. I just wish that they could see that there is a very real culture that exists around them. I mean, there is a lot of, from my cultural perspective, there's obviously a lot of hurt and pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Has occurred. But at the same token, if you think about societies and how long societies have been around, America has grown a lot in a very short amount of time. I think one of the things that causes American culture to be so fraught with the concept of division is that we're constantly pushing ourselves to grow. And so we don't ever actually settle in, right? There's always an upheaval. There's always like the next thing. Yeah. So if you think about it, like if you start in the 50s, right? Well, start in the 20s with women's suffrage.
Mm-hmm.
That was massive growth.
Yeah.
Women got the right to vote. Massive growth. Americans provided the right to vote before other countries did. You know, so there's always been this sort of there's always been this striving for becoming a better fabric. And I think that's the fundamental culture that is what this country is. Even though we have had issues where genocide has occurred and where you have, you know, the racial riots, you have women's suffrage, you have now the concept of bodily autonomy. These are all growth things. And the fact that as a culture, the culture embraces, regardless of which side of the fence you're on, it still embraces the growth.
And the freedom.
Right.
Which I think maybe a lot of us have lost the appreciation for what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
More and more when I've listened to different podcasts on immigrants or even talked to immigrants myself, hearing their stories of lives that they've lived, like people my age, mm-hmm. that they've lived in other countries, it's like my brain can't even wrap my mind around how different it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like even just the fact where it's like, you could be born into a certain economic status and it doesn't.
But you're stuck there.
Stuck there. Mm-hmm. No matter what your intelligence is, no matter mm-hmm. what your drive is.
Or what you can offer the society around it you. It doesn't there's matter. No reward.
Yeah. Right. And so it's like success isn't guaranteed in America. Just because you work hard doesn't mean you're going to, but there's a chance.
Yeah.
And there's that opportunity.
I think that if you do here, if you do work hard, though, and you allow yourself to be in opportunities path, that you will always step forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're not afraid to step forward. And I think that is sort of part of that American culture. Yeah. That is part of the fabric of that. And this is such an interesting thing that I get into with people, especially when they're like, I don't have a culture. And you're just like, but you do. Even if you are Heinz 57, right? You have a cultural background. You know, and this is what it is. And it's absolutely something that exists.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, and we were talking about this, you know, it was like sort of like we're not a melting pot, right? Mm-hmm. We're a salad bowl.
Yes.
We really are. Like some people are iceberg lettuce, some people are tomatoes, some people are cucumbers or whatever, right? But we live in a boundary that allows us to coexist as cucumbers and tomatoes and iceberg lettuce or arugula if you want to be arugula that day, you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is very exciting. And I think growing up, culturally different, I think that was one of the things that I really saw as I was coming into sort of like the school and learning and existing in this sort of colonial environment mm-hmm. was that a lot of people weren't seeing is that you do have such a fantastic culture. I mean, you don't have to take somebody else's culture away, but you right. have a fantastic culture of your own.
So I'm curious because one of the things we mentioned earlier was that a lot of times marriage is usually what filters out culture mm-hmm. if you marry out of your culture, right? So is your husband also Native American?
No, he's not. So Kevin is, like his family came from, like culturally is Welsh.
Okay.
Though they don't really, it's not like they're Welsh today, right? Today they're very country, rural Missouri Americans. But I was fortunate enough to marry someone who accepts culturally different, mm-hmm. right? So Kevin will tell you that from time to time he struggles with the oddness of things like, you know, when someone dies, all the mirrors come down in the house. And
interesting. We also cover the mirrors.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I've never heard of another culture who did
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So we have a belief that when a person dies, they don't necessarily go to the other side and stay there, right?
Same
they come
thing.
Back and forth.
Yeah.
But initially when a person dies, there's a disorientation because mm-hmm. they've been disembodied essentially, right?
Right.
And mirrors can trap them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cover mirrors and drains.
I don't know about drains, but we do the mirror thing about how, like, same exact concept where it's like, yeah, that's so fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, so
that's so interesting.
For Kevin, it was just odd. Like, he didn't understand that, you know, and of course we also smudge. So that's like a sage kind of thing, or it depends on the culture that you're from. We use a lot of cedar, actually. Mm-hmm. But so we will do that. And so initially when we first got together, he's like, what are you doing? Like, what is this thing that you're doing? And I had to explain it to him, because to me, it's just very normal. This is just what you do, right? Like, we're going to cover the mirrors. I mean, you're just not going to see yourself for about a week. You just live with it.
Yeah.
And so I, like I said, I was really fortunate that he was able to sort of come on board with me with that.
So there was the respect and like the curiosity. He has the respect.
Kevin would describe himself as a recovering Catholic.
Ah, okay. I've heard that a lot.
So his family was very Catholic, or is very Catholic. And there's a whole backstory to, you know, like how he came around to where he is now. And he's very spiritual. He just doesn't necessarily believe in that belief set anymore. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think because he was on that journey, that coming into contact with culturally other was accepting, right? Like, he was able to go there and be there and live with it and embrace it. And he's really good at sort of accepting like what it is. Right. And he has kind of stopped asking why. He's just like, okay.
New information. Guess we're doing something new today.
We're going to do this now.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yep. I'm on board. That's awesome. I mean, because it is hard when you come from like a certain culture and a heritage, when you're, and we discussed this as well, which I think is so fascinating, where sometimes you love being the person who is like a spokesperson for your, mm-hmm. your culture, right? Like, mm-hmm. you love answering questions. I mean, sometimes because it is the norm, you don't think about it in that way. So having the conversations, like, not only is it interesting to you, sometimes you might have to look up why you do certain things, because maybe you're like, I don't know, we just do it.
Oh, yeah.
And then sometimes it reminds you how beautiful your culture is well, which is very cool, or how special it is. But
I find myself asking, like, I'll call my aunt. I'll be like, Auntie, why do we do this?
Yeah.
And she'll be like, whatever, right?
So I Google. That's like my modern auntie. Or I ask my mom. But it's also, I think, just super interesting, because sometimes you just get tired of it.
Yeah.
You're just like, I just want to be Nahama, or I just want to be David, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily want to be speaking about this all the time.
I think that's true. So there, most of the time, I will say, like, when the subject comes around and becomes a thing, I don't mind discussing it, right? But there are definitely moments where it's just like, you know, and it's usually surrounded by an ignorant statement, is usually that moment where I'm just like, I don't want to.
Like, depends on who it is as well.
Your mood,
who it is. If it's almost like a bigoted or racist kind of comment versus truly genuine. Saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if a person is like, says something to me and they're just like truly genuinely ignorant,
mm-hmm.
then I'm just like, okay, boo, I got you. Right.
Right.
But if it's a person that's coming up and they're, and you could tell, like, you can almost always tell that it's loaded,
mm-hmm.
and that there's something there, right?
Like an agenda almost. Yeah.
And then you're just like, I don't have the energy or time for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find that. Yeah. And we talked about that. It's a thing.
Yeah. I do have a question. And again, this is going to be like my ignorance, but this is just like the TikTok news.
Right. Okay.
So there's two things that I've heard recently kind of circling around like the Native American community. Mm-hmm. And one is that there's been like disappearances, like mm-hmm. children. And I'm sure this is not anything that's new. Mm-hmm. But like, can we get some intel from you on what's that about? What's like awareness we should be putting out?
Okay,
there?
So missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Oh, wow.
Is the thing. And so you will see people in social media images with a red hand across their face.
Mm-hmm.
And that is referencing that. It's a horrible problem, especially up north, in sort of the northern reservations. So regional differences.
Mm-hmm.
There are few to no reservations south, and almost all the reservations are kind of up north. So it's like Pine Ridge and Standing Rock and all that. They have a problem with others coming in and abducting their women, murdering their women, and then selling the children into sex trade. And that's a very real thing that's been happening for some time now. And so if one is interested in understanding more, Google missing and murdered Indigenous women, and that will take you. There's a whole thing about it, and it is a real problem. And like every family, you will find that every Native family has been affected. We all have missing family members that, you know, either we have found murdered or we haven't found.
Why is no one talking about this more?
So I don't really know how to answer that. I mean, the internal cultural theory is politics.
Mm-hmm.
If the government brought awareness, then there's other things that the government would also have to kind of come clean with, right? But also, you have a thing where it's not really, I mean, the news media isn't going to find it to be, like, you're not going to sell newspapers on it.
Right.
You know, it almost becomes one of those sort of grassroots things that people just have to share. You just have to make others aware that it exists.
So we'll start here.
There you go.
And then the other thing that's been circulating that I was curious about as well was that I've heard that there's like certain territories across the U.S. that mm-hmm. have been given back to like the Native American tribes and clans.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently there's been talk about how like that was supposed to be off limits, given back, but recently there's been talk about like the government coming in and it not being so.
Yeah, so that actually references the original treaties that created the foundation for the Indian Relocation Act, right? So most of the Native treaties have been broken and have been broken over and over and over and over again over time. So some time back, there was a series of lawsuits against the United States government for mishandling the trust fund that exists to take care of Native people. So in Indian territory and on any Indian land, pardon me, the mineral right that's there and the taxation that occurs actually belongs to Native people. Okay, so that money goes and funnels into the Department of Interior, who then sends it over to the BIA, and then the Department of Historical Accounting actually handles that, and they're supposed to give apportionments to the tribal governments or to the families directly as a per cap on whatever they're supposed to have. And the United States government has unfortunately historically not done that correctly. And so there are a series of lawsuits that occurred, and the Good Eagle settlement and the Bear settlement. So those are just some things that if someone wanted to go Google, you could look that up, right? And it will tell you kind of There's a lot of documents and a lot of back and forth there, but it'll kind of give you some foundational information on that. From that, then comes additional legal action from the Native tribes, right? Where they are basically coming back and say, okay, Supreme Court of the United States has now said that we as independent and sovereign governments have been mistreated. Y'all have taken land that you're not supposed to. You're leasing land that you're not supposed to. So on and so forth. And through that effort, the land is being given back. And then you have the federal government that comes back in and is like, well, but, you know, we kind of already gave that away. So you can't just take it back from someone who's paying for it. And we're like, but you kind of did that already.
Right.
And, and now you have to give it back. And now you owe retribution. You owe retribution to these people over here who have paid.
Yeah.
Right. Because this is now ours. So that's happening. And a lot of that is actually centered in like Oklahoma and parts of Arkansas, where you have so many tribes that were relocated to.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you want to know more there, I think it behooves one to look at the history of the statehood of Oklahoma. Oklahoma didn't become a state until like the 40s, right? Prior to that, it was mostly Indian territory. And so you can see who was given what allotments, and then the government kind of erases the allotments and kind of combines everything together. And they're like, well, you're going to go over here now, sort of situation. And that's your historical foundation to what's happening today,
but
which
you're
is
never taught this in school.
Yeah. Well, most people wouldn't be taught that, right? There is a sort of prescribed thing that we learn about. We kind of touch on it. We always have. We've kind of been like, yeah, so this relocation thing happened, and like a million people died, but then we gave them land of their own.
Yeah.
That's kind of how that narrative
goes. I think this episode has been so intriguing and so interesting and eye-opening for me because, like you said, I only knew like the basics. Right? Like I knew we had come over, we colonized, we took from the Native Americans. How sad, but not really understanding what that meant. Not really understanding what that tragedy truly was. Like how many cultures were wiped out.
Right.
How like the whole way of life was actually so sophisticated and wasn't savage, you know?
Right.
So this has been really eye-opening for me.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I want to leave with is that you will find that most Native people don't harbor a lot of resentment there because there's an understanding of misunderstanding, right? Which is sort of historically part of our fabric. And it is an understanding that when people came over here, they didn't really get it. That when we said we have a concept of non-ownership, it didn't mean it wasn't ours.
Right.
It just meant that that technically doesn't belong to our being, right? Like this is, we call it Turtle Island, and it was what God gave us to be. So it doesn't belong to us, it belongs to God, was what they were trying to convey.
Yeah.
Though language barriers, understanding, philosophical barriers, like that totally didn't translate. And they're like, oh, okay, let's put our flag here now. And so I think the takeaway there really is that at this point, there's an understanding that we all belong, right? Now, you'll have some Native people who are still very angry generationally and they want it back. But for the most part, you will find that most Natives have this idea that when you're born here, you're from here. Like you being born here, your soul belongs to this land too.
I love that.
And so we have to get along like we did before colonization, right? We all were born here. And so our soul belonged to the land. And so we have to acknowledge each other's governments and each other's sovereignty and each other's differences respectfully and lovingly. Right?
So it's a new era.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think it's important, you know, to understand the indigenous people because they were here first and mm-hmm. they understand the land so much more. But I love the concept of what you said about how, like, if you're born in a land, it's your soul's land, right? So now there's like all these different cultures that come together, and it's like, if only we could all have that perspective, what a world.
Oh yeah,
we would live in.
Yeah.
We could talk about so many different conversations.
We do
in general, but I'm saying, like, for the purpose of like the podcast, right, like right. I think other people would want to gain from it. And also just personally for me, like, as much as I want my podcast episodes to add value to others, it's really just selfishly a documentary for myself of like my favorite people, my favorite conversations.
Right.
So I definitely think we should do a part two, because like we definitely, you know, scratch the surface about talking about culture. I would love to do another episode another time to talk about art.
Yes.
But that's a whole episode on its
that's
own.
That's a whole thing. Yes.
So we'll save that for another time. But what I do want to say is I have this tradition.
Okay.
At the end of each episode, I like to have my guests share a meaningful life lesson or quote that has mm-hmm. touched them that they want to share with the world. Because just to share some Hebrew, this whole podcast is based on this quote, which is Ezehu Chacham, Halo made me kol adam, mm-hmm. which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a lot from you tonight.
Aw.
But if you can just share like one last little gem.
Yeah. So my great grandmother used to say that true wisdom is when you know that you know nothing.
Mm. I'm learning that every day.
Yeah. It's I love it because it reminds you that we're sponges and we still have so much to absorb.
It like humbles you,
It does.
But it reminds you to be curious yep. and to stay hungry.
Yeah.
Love it. Ah, so great. Thanks for coming on.
Yes.
This was amazing. Guys, thanks for listening. As you could see, this has been another like fascinating episode. And you guys can find us everywhere where you can listen to podcasts. But if you want to watch the video and you're not already watching it, you could see it on Spotify or YouTube. Give us a like, a follow, subscribe, 5-star review. And obviously, if this meant something to you, please share with a friend, spread the word. And thank you so much for watching. I hope you guys have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.